Welcome to the Broken Hearts Podcast. Today on the show, my guest is Allie Lightfoot. Allie is a comedian from Phoenix who recently moved to Philadelphia and was back in town for the Bird City Comedy Festival. It was Saturday morning of the Bird City Comedy Festival. Me and Allie met up for brunch. We originally were going to go to the Coronado, but it was packed because it's so delicious. So we instead grabbed a booth at Coco's. Maybe not quite as good, but we still had a great conversation. We sat there, talked for a while about heartbreak. Enjoy.
The other neighbor came down and was like hanging her head off the stairs and yelling at me. So now they're both yelling. And they're like, you make so much noise all the fucking time. And I'm like, okay, what about you? I was like, you guys make noise. I'm like, you walk around at like 2 a.m. in like whatever kind of shoes. Because at 2 a.m, we'll hear just like, it sounds like they're walking with hammers taped to their feet. Like, it sounds just like someone just like hitting the floor with tiny hammers. Like, it's in the, it's like, oh, and I know it's like weird high heels, because like I know that sound on wood floors. So it's just like, you don't need to wear those at 2 a.m. And I was just being like, listen, you wear loud shoes, okay?
Yeah.
She took that as me knowing what she does for a living, which I didn't. And she starts screaming, I'm a stripper. Like, you know, like, and I was like, oh gosh, you know? And I was like, no, I was like, I was just saying your shoes are loud. And yeah. So they're freaking out at me. And I go, okay, like, I would love to talk to you if you want to talk. I'm like, but this isn't talking. So I'm going to have to end this conversation. And I shut the door. And then they proceed to stomp, jump, bang things around in their apartment, and scream at the top of their lungs about us for 2 hours.
What?
2 hours. It's midnight, so I just immediately, I'm like, they're the biggest idiots in the world, and I start recording them with my phone. Because I'm like, I need fucking proof of this, because this is insane. So I'm recording, just like, the chick went and got the shoes I was talking about, put them on, and she's like, she fucking just starts stomping around her apartment in them, and it just sounds like the recording sounds like I'm banging pots and pans, like, in my own apartment. That's how fucking loud it is.
Damn.
It was crazy. And at one point, she opens the door to the hallway and screams out, and they're like, these are the fucking shoes, bitch. And then she just starts, like, stomping in the hallway, and then she slams the door. And I'm like, these are the dumbest people ever. Like, how are you not, one, not self-aware at all? That, like, you were being way worse than we were. Thanks. And then also, still be at it.
Do you need anything right now?
No, you guys. Okay.
Just more coffee.
More coffee? Yes.
Well, the original complaint was that you were keeping them awake?
No, the original complaint is that they had PTSD and our fighting was triggering
them.
Oh,
that's okay.
Which, if that's the case, and you know, it might be, that's awful, and I'm so sorry. You know,
yeah.
But like, the response to that should not be, for 2 hours you're going to scream about me and stomp in your apartment.
Yeah.
But it didn't stop there. Oh, my favorite part about the screaming, my favorite, absolute favorite part, was when she started talking about how I'm not borderline. Yeah, so she was telling me I don't have borderline personality disorder. Yeah, she de-diagnosed me. And she was like, because one of the things I said when I closed the door, because she just told me she was like, I just got diagnosed. And I was like, cool. So when I shut the door, I said, like, good luck in DBT. Because that's the kind of therapy I'm in.
Mm.
So then she starts screaming later about how, like, DBT doesn't work. And I'd know that if I was actually borderline. And I'm just like, okay. And then she was like, what did your mommy not hold you enough? Or something. She's like, my dad was borderline. His dad was borderline. I was born this way. And I wanted to be like, yeah, like, me too. That's literally how you get it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not just making it up. And why would I pick that specific thing? Like, bipolar is obviously the best choice. And, like,
yeah,
everybody knows that way more.
Yeah.
So it was just so dumb. But at one point, and I have it, and it's kind of clear on this one recording, it's my favorite, she says, she's like, you're not even a part of my life. She's like, you're not my friend. You're not my friend's friend. You're not my partner. Like, you are not relevant to my life. Why do you think I have to cater to you? She was like, why are you trying to make me shoulder your burden? Right? She's like, I don't fucking know you. And then she screams, why aren't you shouldering mine?
Yeah. What?
Yeah. So you're mad because I'm trying to get you to shoulder my burden of my mental illness just when I was trying to be empathetic with you. And you're mad that I'm not shouldering yours in the same breath. and you can't hear yourself.
Oh.
Yeah, it's rough.
Her therapy sounds like it's not working.
Yeah.
It's some
So then they started playing DMX really loud.
They did or you did?
They did. So then we got DMX played loudly for 2 more hours.
After the stomping?
Mm-hmm. So now it's been 4 hours.
Okay.
And then they find my Facebook somehow and start fucking harassing me on Facebook and talking about how, like, rude I was for fighting and not being mindful of their mental illness. And, like, she made a joke about the blog I just started, which really pissed me off. It's like,
that's rude.
Yeah, that's rude. That's basically like a diary entry, and like you're making fun of me for it. And like,
this is all because your cat was running on a wheel.
And there was a roller coaster fight in a TV show. Yeah. Yep. So that was a treat. That was a real treat. And that whole. It was a 5-hour evening before they quieted down. And
into like, it was like 5 a.m.?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the entire time just completely maintaining that we were so rude for being loud. For 5 hours. It was, I mean.
Do you still see them?
No, I mean, I see them sometimes. They're like, I just avoid eye contact. And the shitty part about it is, like, yeah, like, I just got diagnosed borderline, and I just found out that there's this huge stigma against people who have it, and, like, there's, like, even therapists or doctors who won't treat you if you have the diagnosis because they think that, like, you're manipulative or, like, you're not willing to get better. And so, like...
Really?
Yeah.
It's... Wow, it's like a...
Like, people would rather treat a psychopath than, like, a borderline person. And it's just... And borderline is just you have so many emotions at, like, their highest level at one time, and you get overwhelmed. And that's... But you just don't... You're not good at emotion regulation, and you have poor coping skills. And that's basically what it is. And it just has this horrible stigma. And that's why I started the blog that I did, to kind of talk about it and be like, no, like, people can function and, like, actively be in therapy to get better, you know? And then here I am 2 days later, face-to-face with the stereotype, the stigma of, like, the thing I'm so pissed off about and, like... It was so frustrating, but it also made me feel really good about where I was in, like, recovery and, like, in therapy and getting better. And, like, yeah, it's really hard right now, but at least I'm self-aware and I want to get better. And I'm not trying to make everybody cater to me in my mental illness. You know, like if I had... bad PTSD like that, like, maybe I wouldn't live in the city, you know? Or if you can't do that, then, like, maybe learn some coping skills if that does happen, you know? It's not your, like, neighbor's responsibility to not trigger you, you know?
And learn to communicate if you need that.
Yeah.
I'm sure if they would have come down there and have been, like, just calmly explained the
BFF,
situation,
yeah.
And been like, oh, okay, like, you would have been understanding. But
100%.
It's like,
yeah.
That's tough. But do you think that happens a lot with mental illness in general? Like, people will be honest enough with themselves to be able to get, like, a diagnosis, and then they kind of just, like...
Yeah.
Cave into that. And it's not necessarily, like, a choice of, like, well, no, I don't have to have any responsibility or accountability for anything, but... It's hard to fix yourself, right? Like,
it's the most difficult thing I've ever tried to do. And I've been doing it for, like, 2 years now. So since I was 25, I cut my parents out of my life completely 2 years ago. And since then, I've just been working on self-esteem and, like, my self-worth and, like, my mental health. And it's so fucking hard because your brain is like a computer and it's just, like, learned certain ways to do things, and so you basically have to, like, recode your brain. You have to, like, change the connections and how you process information, and that just takes a lot of repetition, and it's fucking exhausting. And so I totally get why people just stop doing it, and I don't think a lot of people are very self-aware. I think, like, they're self-aware enough to be like, something's going on in my life and I don't feel good. So I'll get a diagnosis, but they're not self-aware enough to... Some people don't even know when they have feelings. Which blows my mind because I'm constantly aware of all of my feelings at all times. But it's true, like, one of the things we learn in DBT, like, I missed out on this week's session in therapy to come to the festival, but this session was all about the different ways you can... how emotions feel and how you can describe them. So this week was just like learning about emotions so you can recognize when they happen. And some people just can't do that. They don't know why they feel bad, and they don't know why they're angry, and they're just angry all the time. So, like, that's rough. That's like a rough existence. But
you've always been aware of your feelings though?
Yeah. Yeah.
How old... I mean, like, what's the earliest you remember being, like, having that awareness?
I said a lot of weird stuff as a kid that I remember saying. I remember just feeling... I think I was just kind of born lonely. Like, that's what my friend says about her daughter. She says she's born lonely. And when I heard that, I was like, oh my God. That's, I feel, it's like, there was just like this emptiness. I wasn't happy. I've been depressed since I was a little kid. But I remember in first grade, I was hanging out with my friend, and we were talking to her mom, and I just, like, decided to tell them that, just, like, matter-of-factly, that, like, sometimes when I get really upset, I'll put a pillow over my face, and I just will try to stop breathing, and I'm in first grade, and I'm telling my friend's mom this in first grade, and... So when I came home that day, when she dropped me off, she wanted to talk to my parents, and she told them what I said, and then she left, and then my parents took me into the garage for some reason, which is weird, and they were like, we need to talk to you, like, did you say this? And I was like, yeah, and,
doing okay here?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And,
which is fine.
It's okay. And, I was like, yeah, I did. And my mom just got really mad, and my dad just said, like, why would you embarrass your mother like that? Like, I can't believe you told somebody that. Like, that's awful. And my dad spanked me in the garage because I told somebody.
Why in the garage?
I don't know. I think maybe, like, my brother was home and they didn't. Maybe they just, like, wanted to talk to me somewhere where, like, he couldn't hear or something. I don't know. But.
And did they ever talk to you about it again?
No.
How often did you do that?
I mean, I think I didn't do it a lot, but I think it's because I learned really early with my parents that, like, I couldn't express bad emotions. Mm-hmm. Because, one, it would either be embarrassing for my mom or be, like, causing a scene. It just all comes back to, like, being embarrassing for my mom. So, like, if I got upset or anything, my mom would just be like, you need to stop it right now. Like, you're overreacting. Nothing happened to you. Like, you're fine. So, it's just, like, I couldn't cry or get emotional or upset because they would, like, make fun of me for it, too. Mm-hmm. Or tell me I'm, like, way too sensitive. So, I'd be in my room upset about something, and I can't be loud. I can't bang stuff around. So, I think it was just kind of, like, getting the frustration out and just kind of, but like, I don't know, maybe like the first step to my self-harm was like trying not to breathe with a pillow over my face in elementary school. But yeah, it was weird. I like, when I think back now, like when I'm in therapy, there's like all these moments where I just feel so sad for myself. It's like a big thing that I'm struggling with right now is I haven't self-harmed in a month, and I'm like 27 years old, and like that sucks. But the thing is, I haven't done anything, and I started cutting when I was like 20 and like out of the house, because I never did that when I was home, because I had this fear that my mom would see it and then she'd be like satisfied that she got to me that much that I did that. So I hit myself for like a lot of years. I didn't realize that was like self-harm, but I would like pull my hair or just like punch myself or like hit my head with a hairbrush, just like really crazy sounding stuff. So when I quit self-harming and I just stopped cutting, I would still sometimes like hit myself out of frustration. But I'm trying to completely curb that behavior. So now I'm not doing any of that.
Is one check okay or you want separate?
Yes.
Yeah, that's good. Like, just go away. So it's hard because it's like, I'm not doing any of that. And when I get really frustrated, because I've stopped doing it, it's all I want to do. Because it's like this addiction, because it's like a release, you know? And so I have these like pent up feelings, but I can't do anything about it other than like coping skills to calm down, like TIPs, which are really cool. TIPs stand for like temperature change, intense exercise. Or, like, progressive muscle relaxation. And it's just to, like, bring your head out of it. Mm. And, like, so you can calm down.
So you, that's all pretty recent that you started learning to do that?
Yeah.
So you never really realized that. Did you get the connection when you started cutting, like, to the hitting yourself and all that?
No.
Yeah.
No, I didn't. It's so dumb. It's like when I started cutting it. It's like when I start. That's like when I thought I was starting to self-harm. And I was like, oh, man, it's getting bad.
You knew it was bad, though.
Yeah.
Like, it was,
Yeah. How did it start?
How do you kind of, convince yourself or
volunteer? I'm very, like I said, like I'm really aware of my feelings and I'm really in tune with like my body. And when I get really upset, I can, like, it feels like I can individually feel the tension like everywhere that it is. So normally when I get upset, the first thing that'll happen is it's like a rush, like an adrenaline rush through like my whole body, just like a quick wave of like this feeling, this just strong sensation. And then my cheeks immediately feel hot, and then like my heartbeat starts to beat faster, and then my throat will just start to feel like there's pressure on my throat, and then my arms get this weird sensation where they get like almost like tingly, like I could feel like the weight of my arm, like I'm just like really aware of it. And sometimes the sensation gets so strong that it feels like you have to do something to make that stop. Mm-hmm. So like hitting yourself or punching a wall, it just like it, you just your arm feels like you want to do it, and if you do that, then like it stops feeling that way. So it, I guess, I mean, I started with like scratching at myself, which is weird, and then
is it your fingernails?
Yeah. And then being like, okay, that's good, because when you hit yourself, it's different. It's like, unless you hit yourself really hard, then you just have like a dull ache. Mm-hmm. But when, like, when you scratch yourself, it stinks for like a long time. So then you're kind of aware of it for longer. So you kind of have this period of numbness that just lasts a little bit longer. And it's weird. And like sometimes you need that because your emotional stuff doesn't make sense. Like, sometimes I'll just get really overwhelmed, and my logic brain will be like, this, you shouldn't be this upset. Like, it doesn't make sense, but the emotions just take over, and so sometimes having a physical pain makes that make more sense, and then you can focus on that pain, so then you don't have to think about the emotion thing you were just going to, and you just focus on the physical. So it just takes your brain out of it. Yeah, it was like a weird transition, but I never really thought about like that hitting myself was that hard, was that bad to do, mm-hmm. you know? And it's so weird.
And you, so your mom had this whole issue with being embarrassed or whatever, mm-hmm. and like that, all that. Did your dad have? Was he like?
I only embarrassed my dad by being fat.
Okay.
Yeah. That was, like, the only way I could embarrass him.
Would he say that?
Yeah.
From how old?
He really got, I think, once I hit eighth grade and I wasn't getting thinner, I think he started to get upset that I wasn't making it a priority to, like, be thin. And so his attitude towards me started to change. Because up until that point, my dad was very much my safety in my parents. Like, my mom was crazy, and she'd be angry all the time. And my dad, for the majority of the time, I mean, I remember about 5 times where my dad spanked me because he wanted to. Like, every other time, it was because my mom told him to, because she was mad at me for something.
What's is their relationship?
Super fucking weird.
Yeah.
Like, my mom's 5'2" and petite, and my dad's 6'3" and a bodybuilder, and my mom, like, runs his life.
Yeah.
Like, she ran the whole household. And so my dad, so the term for having, like, narcissistic parents, which is what I have 2 narcissists for parents, is, one will be the narc, and then the other one will be the, oh man, what is it called? Enabler?
And the narc?
Yeah. So, like, my mom would be, he would just enable her narcissism, because if, and he liked it when she would focus on me, because then she wasn't focusing on him. And my mom would just bitch about everything constantly, and if it was about me, then he would be fine. So they both use me as, like, a scapegoat.
Why do you think he has narcissism? Or what's...
My dad works out every day for about 3 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
My dad's always cared about his hair and, like, his appearance and looking physically good. And if there's a reflective surface when he passes by, he looks.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, that's just, like, my daddy's very vain. And so, yeah, and his sister's 6 foot tall, and she's a big lady. And he saw her get teased growing up, and he would have to, like, he said one time that he put a big dent in a locker, a metal locker, by shoving a guy's head into it. because that guy made fun of his sister. So he saw her be really hurt by that, and I think he wanted to protect me from that. And but also he was embarrassed that I was like that.
Yeah.
So it's like this weird mix of let's sell this to you, like we're worried about your health and like your well-being as a person and how you're accepted by society, but really we just think you're embarrassing and you're making us look bad. Like that's, yeah, it was rough. So is that bullshit? And my mom is the most insecure person I've ever met in my entire life, but she'll put a full face of makeup on every day before she leaves the house because she feels like if she doesn't do that, then she can't go out in public because she's a narcissist who thinks everyone in the world is constantly thinking about her, like when they're in the room with her. So yeah, so they care so much about how people look, and they judge people based on how they look. So they think that's how the world works.
Yeah.
And so they think that the only way to be successful or have people accept you is if you're normal and, like, acceptable, you know?
Yeah.
So it's super dumb.
So they're kind of victims of that.
Yeah.
And then they're kind of projecting all of it
onto
you a little bit.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Like, the reason I cut them out of my life was I had a really bad moment when I actually, like, tried to commit suicide. And I was at my parents' house the very next day, and I was talking to my dad, and he was like, you know, you just need to stop blaming all your problems on us. And I was like, cool, I'm not. Like, that's not what I'm doing. Like, I'm in therapy because, like, stuff you guys did just stuck with me, and I'm trying to heal. Like, I'm not saying I'm not blaming you or taking it out on you. And I was like, stuff you said really stuck. And I was like that time when I was in high school and you and mom sat me down and basically had an intervention with me and told me that nobody would ever love me if I was fat. And like how my dad would have never talked to my mom if she looked like me. And how if people tell me they love me, it's just so they can use me for what I have. And I told him that, expecting him to be like, I don't remember, or I didn't say that, you know? But what he said was, it's true.
So he still believed it.
Still believes it. And that's the moment when I was like, okay, I'm really done with you guys, and you're not willing to get better, and I can't believe you believe that, and, like, you really don't think I deserve to be loved, so you don't get to be in my life. Like, I'm not gonna put up with your shit anymore because you're not willing to try to change. So, and that's the best decision I ever made. But, yeah.
How long did you believe them when you were a kid?
That was true?
Yeah.
Until I was 25.
That moment.
Yeah. And I don't believe it, but there's this thing I read, and it was like, the way you talk to your children becomes their inner voice. Mm-hmm. And it's so true, because it's like, every insecurity or like bad thought that I have is my mom could say it out loud. And she would be like, yeah, I totally agree. So it's every day, they're not in my life anymore, but every day I have to fight that belief that that's true. And it sucks. And it's like getting way better, but like it's awful.
Because you're constantly working on changing that.
Yeah,
that
because every bad thought that I have, when it pops into my head, I either have to be like, that's not true, these are the facts, or I just have to be like, my brain's just firing a thought off that doesn't mean anything, and I don't need to think about it.
Yeah.
Because it's just a response.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Ahwatukee.
Were you always, like, goth?
No. Did I always want to be goth? Oh my god, so fucking bad.
Yeah.
Oh my god. So fucking bad.
Because you kind of came in, like, it's the green and everything is pretty new.
Yeah.
Right? What were you, were you popular in school?
No, because I believe that people didn't like me. I had really good friends, and I was, like, the class clown, and I could make a whole class like me.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't have the confidence to try to form friendships that weren't just there, like, really easily and naturally. And I think to be popular, you kind of have to, like, you have to think that everybody wants to be your friend, and then it just happens. And I didn't. But I had a couple really good friends. I've never, like, I've had the most friends I've ever had now. Since, like, and I'm the happiest I've ever been. And, my mom, the thing about wanting to be goth and not being able to, was my mom saw me as a way for people to look at her as, like, oh, what a great person she is, because look at her daughter, so great. So I had to look and dress how she wanted. Like, I was never able to color my hair or cut my hair. Like, it took me, like, it was like a 6-month fight between me and my mom my junior year in high school, because I wanted to get bangs. Like, and I still didn't get them. So when I went to college, I just immediately, like, the first day I was there, colored my hair. And I did black on top and bright red underneath. And my hair was, like, down to my waist. And it was just, like, I had so much beautiful hair. And it was the best. And I, like, got my lip pierced. And just, like, instantly started living how I wanted to live forever. And then I went to cosmetology school and just went crazy and just kept changing my hair and I, like, kept frying it. And, like, at one point I had a teal mullet, like Captain Planet style. And I just never wanted to have normal hair, so I haven't. So for seven years now, I haven't had a normal hair color, which feels great.
Yeah.
But it took me until 2 years ago to start dressing the way I want, because, oh my god, picking out clothes and shopping for clothes was, like, the worst thing in the world, because my mom was so judgmental about stuff. So it was never fun, so I never put a lot of thought into it, but after I started to, like, really live for myself, I was like, why am I wearing these clothes that I don't even like them? Like, how can I feel good about myself where I feel like I look like a dork? So then I just started buying pieces that I liked, and it's just evolved into now I have, like, an all-black wardrobe that's, like, witchy and goth, and it's fun, and I feel great all the time now.
So when you left your parents, you were 25, right?
Yeah.
And you were you married at that point?
Yeah.
So that you had some support and everything, or?
Yeah.
How did, like, when you left the house, were you didn't live with them at the time?
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
So how did that?
It's rough because our marriage wasn't in a super great place at the time, and I couldn't accept his love because I didn't feel like I deserved it. So when you feel like no one can love you and you have these abandonment issues from your parents, it's hard to be in a relationship. And that's, like, a part of why I was in such a bad state at that time. And we weren't being very good to each other. And so after that, we lived together for a little while, and he got offered a... Super good.
Really, I think you're beautiful. Oh, thank you. I love your green hair.
Thank you.
I swear it's a green hair. Do you guys want any more coffee or anything? Or?
No, we're good.
You good? Okay.
He got a job offer for Temple University in Philadelphia, and so the plan was he was going to move to Philadelphia, and I was going to move to New York. And I was going to start doing comedy in New York. And then the shit with my parents happened. And a couple months later, he moved out there. And then I went a month later because I stayed for my friend's baby shower. And so all of a sudden, I don't have any friends or family. I mean, yeah, I don't have any friends or family. And I'm stuck in the suburbs all day. And I'm just completely isolated. And that turned into a horrible depression. because I had to mourn the loss of my parents. Like, that's, they've been there since day one. Like, you know, like, they were the first people I knew.
Yeah.
And, like, now they're gone. And it's by choice, but it's still a loss. And then I had to figure out that I'm not grieving my parents. I'm grieving the parents I wish I had. And I've been grieving them my whole life. So, like, figuring that out was, like, really healthy and, but it was just a lot at once. And I got really suicidal and I could recognize those feelings and everything again. So I decided to go inpatient and I did about, like, 7 days at Bryn Mawr Hospital in this, like, swanky suburb of Philadelphia, and it was awesome, and it was great, and I met amazing people there, and it was just, like, it was what I needed to, like, get back on track, and then I got into therapy, and I got back on medication, and, but it was just so much to work on my own stuff, and try to be in a relationship, and, it's hard to work on your self-esteem and try to accept someone's love at the same time. So I couldn't do it. And so I left my husband because I needed to completely focus on myself. And I knew, I mean, subconsciously, I knew it would be too hard to try to stay together. So I kind of made a shitty decision and was like, I'm leaving. We are done. Like, don't talk. I need you to not talk to me. Like, I really need to just focus on myself.
So it was a harsh, it wasn't like,
it was abrupt.
Yeah.
I mean, we weren't having a great time. Like, we weren't having a very healthy relationship, but I could have ended that a lot better than we did. And I didn't do that well. And, so I didn't talk to him until, like, we talked for, like a little things, but I didn't want to hear anything about his life or, you know, get into that because I just really needed to focus on me. And I did. And I came out here in June. No, I came out here in July. And then by October, I had started comedy and had a job and, like, got an apartment and, like, just, like, became an adult. Like, in, like, a four-month span. And then he came out to visit. And, like, of course we slept together. And, like, we started talking again. And we ended up getting back together very shortly after that. And then he still lived out there. And I lived in Arizona. And then he came out in June for, like, our anniversary. And then, I'm just moved back in January. And so, like, that timeline is so fucking weird and hard to explain. But it's... We have never had a better relationship now. Like, we do counseling every other week just so we know how to communicate to each other. And he's so, like, willing to work on the relationship that it's, like, a fucking blessing. Like, I don't know how I could do that without someone who is totally dedicated to making sure we have a healthy relationship.
So he got why you left. He was pretty understanding. I'm sure it was not...
I mean, he understands now.
Yeah.
It hurt him a lot. It hurt him, and that sucks. And the way he dealt with that hurts me now still, and it sucks. Because he immediately moved a girl into the apartment, like 3 months after I left.
Yeah.
And so that joke's real. That made my joke where it's like, I just left my husband, and then 3 months ago I found out he's already living with a girl, and it sucks, because, like, why does he get to split rent? Like, that's the thing. Like, I found out about it, and I was like...
Do you want me to take your plates, or are you in your box, or are you still eating?
A box is cool, I guess.
Yeah,
two boxes? Okay.
Yeah. How do you just be like, please don't come over here again? I'm sorry, I'm just awful. Wait. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Whatever. He started living with a girl. I found out and I was, like, crying on my bed. Just, like, so sad. And then I had that thought of, like, why the fuck does he get to split rent now? Like, I'm struggling so hard. And I just went from crying to, like, laughing. And that's my favorite part about being born lonely is, like, I know the best way to cheer myself up by, like, coming up with these, like, silly things to think about when I'm really sad, and they've turned into some of my favorite jokes. But, like, yeah, it sucks, and now I'm trying to deal with the fact that I cut him off completely. It was my choice to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And now I hurt because for months he was like, I feel like he was a person who I didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
And he had this life that I wasn't a part of. And because she lived and moved in with him so quickly, like, it made me feel like, cool, my mom was right. I'm completely replaceable. And it's just like, that's not the case. Like, I know that's not the case. And Allie Long is, like, an amazing person. And I talked about it with her, and she said, dude, you're so great. Like, if you fucking left me, I would be scrambling to fucking have something to focus on, because that would be, like, the worst loss. And I was like, way to come up with the perfect thing that now I'll focus on whenever I have those feelings again. But, yeah, it sucks. It sucked. And I'm not, oh my God, I'm so not mad at him for it. And, like, yeah, you lived your life, like, but it's just, like, it hurts.
Yeah.
Like, it hurts.
That's, it's like a, it's all a reaction.
Yeah. Right?
It's like, you were hurt by somebody, so you hurt him, he hurt you, and it's just like, how do you, you can't, at a certain point you have to just like, let it go, right? I mean.
Yeah, I mean,
with the people, with somebody who actually wants to work on things.
Yeah, the thing is like, I don't know if it's letting it go, or working on yourself so you can know that your relationship is secure.
Because
It's like, I don't think I can just let it go and drop it, because then I'm not going to be working on what's inside of me that's making me feel that way. So that's why, like, I just, also I can't let shit go. Like, I remember it forever.
Yeah.
So,
not forget, but
yeah,
I guess
no.
Maybe acceptance or
yeah,
something.
Like radical acceptance, which is, it's a DBT skill.
What's that?
It's the worst one. It's just radical acceptance. It's just when something's horrible, you can't change it, you just accept it, and just cope with your feelings that you have by accepting it, and it's awful. I hate it. That's the worst one. I hate it. Because I just want to fix stuff, you know?
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's hard. It's hard. My hardest thing with him is trusting that he loves me, which is crazy. Like, it's hard. And since we got back together, like, it's my first time accepting someone's love and being able to love them. Like actually love them. Mm. Because before, I thought I could love, but I didn't. It was very selfish and very protecting myself. And so there was, like, these walls I had, and I wouldn't. And those walls kind of prevented me from having compassion at times when I really needed to have compassion, and I just didn't, because I was focused on protecting my feelings. And so that led to some shitty behavior on my part. And, like, that's how you hurt people. Like, if you don't, you know, like, if you don't, if you can't accept love and you can't give love, like, full love and wanting the best for that person, like, that's a super easy way to just continue to hurt each other and have a bad relationship. And so it's like, yeah, we've been married for 4 years, but, like, really, this is a brand new relationship. It feels like we've just known each other for a long time. So it's, like, it's awesome, and it's great, and I love him so much. And, like, this is now when I cry, when I think about how much I love him. I'm talking about all this horrible stuff. But it's great, and I'm so, like, excited.
So you kind of came into your own, though, by being on alone.
Yeah.
Is that when you had left him and you were living by yourself for the first, was that the first time you lived alone?
Yeah.
I mean, what was that like? Were you, like, the first night in your place, were you, like, freaked out?
Oh my God, I listened to true crime nonstop, so I was terrified. And, like, the worst part was my bedroom had this weird window, and on the bottom of the window, like, on the ground, there was this square that you could slide the window open, so it was just perfectly big enough for a giant man to crawl through. So I was just like, oh, this will just slide open while I'm sleeping, and a man will crawl into my bedroom. It's just, like, super scary, but... yeah, it was scary, but I worked, like, 12 hours a day doing Uber, so I would basically just come home exhausted and then sleep. So it was lonely when I was there, but it was good because I couldn't isolate myself. Because I am, like, I'm an extrovert who will isolate and be alone because I don't want to bother people, like, with my presence. Like, so it made me, I did shows all the time, you know, I'd see my friends every week. It was just, it forced me to not be home and be around people, and that's where I thrive. Mm. It's like, when I'm around people and I can talk and, like, just have good human interaction, it's like, I'm a lot happier person than when I'm hiding in my room thinking everyone hates me or they're mad at me, which is, like, how I spent 25 years of my life. So, like, I'm super done doing that.
Was that, how long did you got into stand-up pretty, you said 3 months after?
Yeah, about, like, 3 months.
And was that, like, what was the drive behind that?
I've just wanted to do it my whole life. Like, I just loved it. Like, my parents have great senses of humor. My brother is one of the funniest people I've ever met in my entire life. And he was 10 years older than me. So he was, like, the coolest person in the world.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
He's funny. He's 10 years older than me. Like, he's just, like, this grown-up.
Yeah.
And he has to hang out with me because we're related.
Yeah.
So my goal as a kid for a long time was, can I make my brother laugh? And that's where I, like, developed my sense of humor. So I just always wanted to do it. I always watched Comedy Central and, like, In Living Color and Saturday Night Live and stuff. And it was just a big part of my life because... I definitely lean towards humor when I'm upset, and I was upset all the time.
Yeah.
So it was just, like, my life. But I did it, like, 5 years ago, I tried it, and I did it, like, once every 4 months for a little bit. And I do, like, 5 minutes every 4 months. That's off. You're not doing comedy. Like,
yeah.
That's torture. Yeah. And I would do, like, new jokes every time. And, like, I just hated myself so much that I couldn't stand standing on a stage and telling jokes. So I knew that until I could be happy with myself, I couldn't do comedy. And then once I was starting to be, that's when I jumped into it.
And it was validating?
Yeah.
Because do you kind of come across stuff from your past and, because your stand-up's pretty personal.
Yeah, and I didn't realize it was for a really long time. I thought that's just, like, how people do it.
Yeah.
And then someone was like, you're really honest. And I was like, what? But, yeah, I don't know.
Is it, like, kind of, do you... do you, like, find stuff and you're like... Oh, this is traumatizing when I was a kid, and can you kind of, like, work that into comedy now?
Yeah, like, I hate getting my blood pressure taken, and I've never realized why until one time they just had to keep doing it because I kept, like, moving or something. But getting a blood pressure cuff on my arm feels exactly like how... it felt when my dad would grab me by the arm and, like, take me to go get, like, a punishment.
Mm-hmm.
Or just, like, take me out of the store because I was, like, embarrassing my mom or something. So it's just, like, that childhood trauma. So I love this joke because I also kind of like making audiences feel a little bit uncomfortable. Because
uh-huh.
that's just, like, a really fun feeling for me. I love it. But I'll be like, does anybody else hate getting their blood pressure taken because it reminds them of their dad squeezing their arm as a kid? They're just like, what? And then I'm like, they're always like, man, your blood pressure's really high. And I'm like, yeah, you know, just reliving childhood trauma. Like, no big deal.
When you left your parents, that first being alone, how did that, like, is that how you figured out that you were always alone?
No, I've just always felt like I didn't have family or friends my whole life. Because when your parents constantly tell you that, like, because I'd be like, I'm going to go to a friend's house. My mom would be like, did they invite you? No, she'd say, did you invite yourself? That's what she'd say. And then I'd mention a friend who she knows I've been friends with for a while, and she'd be like, who's that? I don't know about this person. Or she'd literally just be like, I don't know, do your friends even like you? Like, you don't have friends. Like, just shit like that. So it's just like, do I have friends? Do people like me? And then we moved here when I was 3, away from all of my extended family. So I have a bunch of cousins and aunts and uncles and grandmas and stuff in Texas. But I grew up out here alone. Like, it was just me and my mom and dad once I was 8, because my brother left at 18. So, and, like, they didn't let me go out and do stuff. Like, I had to be at home a lot, just by myself. So I was just, like, alone all the time. And,
Is that, are you, do you think being alone is an okay place? Is there...
I want it to be okay.
Yeah.
For me, in the future. But for now, being alone and being isolated means that I have all the time in the world to think about everything bad. Like, all of the bad things. So it's awful and uncomfortable because at least being around people or, like, doing stuff or, like, working, I can focus on other things that aren't everything I don't like about myself or what people might not like about me. And it's just, like, so self-absorbed. It's just, like, awful. But yeah, and it just, it's a distraction because I am constantly thinking about what's wrong and constantly having to reframe and, like, tell myself that just make it sound a bit better, you know? Or, like, or tell myself that my thoughts aren't facts.
Yeah.
Because I was told my whole life that thoughts are everything that matters, what people think about you, and it just does.
Are you in... Is that how you face down? Because the hurdle to not being lonely is that you're constantly beating yourself up over everything.
Yeah.
How did you... I mean, maybe you don't even know. But how do you think you kind of face that fear down? Because, I mean, now you're like...
By radically accepting that I am a person... And I have worth, and it's not dependent on my physical looks. And that's what makes being alone tolerable. Because if you can like yourself, you can be okay being alone sometimes. But if you hate yourself, and you think everybody hates you, then being alone is like a prison. Like, it's awful. But yeah, it was like getting better with being alone... was I just started to work on my self-esteem and really, like myself for the first time in my life. And that's why I do my hair crazy and, like, why I do, like, clown face makeup or full drag all the time, because it's fun. I fucking love it, and I feel great. And even just doing makeup is kind of like a meditation, because I'm very, like, I like doing stuff with my hands. Mm-hmm. And so with makeup, it's just you're sitting, you're calm, you're being creative, you're expressing yourself, and you're also just using your hands, you know? And it's like a daily meditation if I do it daily. It's like definitely like a moment that's just for me. And if I get complimented on it, that's great, and I love compliments. Yeah. But if I go out and I don't get complimented, I still feel really great.
Yeah.
And I don't do it for that reason. And I don't do it because I think if I don't, then I won't be accepted. And that's... I sometimes get fucked up about it. Because, like I said, like, my mom... Every hair had to be perfect. Everything had to be perfect. She had to look great. And I do my makeup pretty well. And, like, I sometimes fear that people think... Here's me worrying about what people think about me. But I sometimes fear that people think... I look like this because I don't like myself, when it's the complete opposite of the case. It's like, I look like this because I like myself so much.
Yeah.
I like myself so much that I put a bunch of attention into how I look so I can like myself even more.
Yeah.
Like, so it's just different because that's what my mom did it to be accepted. And I don't give a fuck if someone doesn't like it. I like it, and that's what matters.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I haven't had that attitude in my whole life. And it's super freeing.
Yeah. You're not like, it's not like a mask. You're like, no. Adorning yourself.
Yeah,
with things.
I'm just like gilding the lily.
Yeah.
I'm just like, I'm already a cool flower. But now I'm dipped in glitter.
how do you pick the people? Because you chose to get people out of your life. How did you pick people to be in your life now?
It's just if you want to be in my life. And you're willing to be a good person and have a good heart and not be a mean, miserable person, then you get to be. then we totally can. We can be friends. But if you're focused on how everybody's out to get you or just, like, a negative person who's just not willing to do anything to change their situation, even if that's just trying to like yourself more or trying to be nicer to people. Like, because I had a friend since high school and we were really close, and she was like basically family because she had parents like mine, and we like fucking really related, and that was the first friend I ever had where I could be like, my mom did this, and she's like, yep. You know. But she has turned into her mom, and she's not willing to change, and she thinks everybody is doing stuff to her and she doesn't have any part in it. She's like this, I don't want to say victim because I hate that whole like kind of attitude. Mm-hmm. But she she got really upset with me about money because she let me stay with her when I first came out here.
Mm-hmm.
And we like paid their phone a bunch of times, like we helped them keep their house a bunch of times, like just like helped her out financially so much, and I was even babysitting her baby. And she was mad that I wasn't paying rent when I moved out, and she said like, hey, you can stay here for free, no problem, until you get on your feet, you know? And it hurt. And I was like, how fucking dare you? Like, I've helped you so much. And, like, you're mad at me right now because I'm trying to save money to get out of your house. Like, what? Like, you want me to be here longer because you're going to pay you rent? Like, I'm trying to get the fuck out. But she just went off on me one day and freaked out. And it felt like I was talking to my mom. And I started to get really sad, and I was like, she's not going to change. And so I said, I'm going to be out today. Don't worry about it. We don't ever have to talk again. And I haven't talked to her since. So it's like, I think once you cut your parents out of your life, once you break the strongest bond a person has, cutting a friend out is nothing. Cool, you don't want to be a decent person, then we're not friends. And we don't have to be, and I can surround myself with people who are awesome and great and have a way better time than worry about if you're going to get better and be able to treat me like a person, you know? It's just super easy. Like, once you say fuck you to your parents, you can do anything.